Good morning! This is Ellen but Not DeGeneres from Feminist Poltergeist, and you're listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'll see you in the future.
Welcome to Too Much Scrolling for February 13th, 2018. I'm Steve Fodor.
And I'm Calvin Coolidge.
We're just a couple of guys sitting around talking about things that are important to us. Hopefully they're important to you. And if you need more information, there's so many great ways to find more information. This week is full, Chip. Please go around. This week is full.
Every day is a celebration, Steve.
Happy Mardi Gras. Today is Mardi Gras.
Which, as Calvin Coolidge, I am dressed in my feathered thong. And I'm going to be marching down the street. I'm having a great time.
You went to thong? Of course you did.
Of course you did. I'm topless with a thong.
And a top hat.
Exactly. And a monocle.
There you go. Tomorrow, then, obviously, is Ash Wednesday. So happy Lent to all of our listeners who celebrate that.
Yeah, give up other podcasts. Keep listening to us.
There you go. There. We should really push that. Today's your day.
And the deal is do you give the chocolates and flowers before tomorrow? Because tomorrow is Valentine's Day. And
so if your sweetie has given up chocolates... Well, tomorrow might not be the right day to give her chocolates.
Well, you know, what does this article say? Love, lust, and meat. No nose for Valentine's Day.
There you go.
Well, there you go.
Valentine's Day falling on Ash Wednesday. This doesn't happen very often, but this is one of those rare times. So you better ask her what she gave up for Lent before you go shopping at the gas station on the way home
exactly.
On Wednesday.
And then Friday, of course, Steve.
Is Chinese New Year. Happy New Year to everybody who celebrates Chinese New Year. It is the year of the dog beginning on Friday.
Well, that's how we celebrate, baby. We do it all year. And then Monday. Monday's my day, right?
Yeah, that's President's Day. Happy President's Day, President Coolidge.
There you go.
Enjoy your monocle.
That's right.
And your top hat and your thong.
That's exactly my plan. It's a good day. It's a good day.
Film at 11.
Brings us to our film at 11, our movie of the week. I got a chance to watch two movies in February, Chip. This is unheard of.
What? How do you do that, Steve?
Snow days, Chip.
Snow days. Well, that helps out a lot.
Uh-huh.
For those who do not know, Steve is very busy right now. He's working with his students on their class play.
Yeah, it is musical time, so you can probably hear in my voice the disappointment of me not being at school right now working on the musical, but I am getting to the exhaustion point. You'll hear in the next couple of weeks where I'll be exhausted. This week, we had 2 days where we had no rehearsal because it snowed here in Chicago.
Here in Chicago, we got one big snow, followed by just a bunch of other snow.
Yeah.
In fact, this morning when we recorded, we had another 5 inches.
Surprise!
Or so.
Here's 5 more inches for you. Thanks.
There you go.
So I got to see Please Stand By. This is a movie that I had on my list for months and was really excited to see, and it lived up to my expectations.
This was released just a couple weeks ago.
Yep. This is a new movie.
And it was in the theater, but you could also watch it through Amazon Prime.
That's right. This is one of those simultaneous releases where they opened it in the theaters the same day that they released it on Amazon Prime. So I opted for Amazon Prime for this.
So it has autism, Star Trek. Tell us about this movie, Steve.
This is a beautiful tale. This is a young lady played by Dakota Fanning who has autism and is a huge fan of Star Trek. She finds out that there's a contest where you can write your own Star Trek script and hand it in to the Paramount Studios in Los Angeles. She knows her Star Trek really well, and she's a really talented writer in this story. She writes this script, she's very proud of it, and then she runs into the deadline to get it in, and she figures out the only way she can get it in is to actually leave her home and to travel to Los Angeles to hand it to the people at Paramount Studios.
And you enjoyed this.
This is great. I really like this.
So just in time for the 54th anniversary of Star Trek.
Yeah.
The 51st. Why celebrate the 50th?
Well, if all goes well and Viacom gets Star Trek back together, we might see some celebrations in the coming year. But yeah, they really skipped over the 50th anniversary of Star Trek last year. It didn't work out well.
But that's not the only thing you saw this week, Steve.
Yeah, I got to see the surprise movie of 2018. Nobody knew about this movie except for the producers, the people who were in this movie. They all kept it secret. Super Bowl Sunday, there was an advertisement on... There were commercials during the Super Bowl. Did you know that?
I knew that there were something about commercials.
There were some commercials.
But I've never really paid attention.
You know, around the Justin Timberlake concert that was in the middle of that football match, there were some commercials, too. One of the commercials says, J.J. Abrams brings you the third Cloverfield movie. And we went, oh... I didn't know there was going to be a third Cloverfield movie, just like we didn't know that there was going to be a second Cloverfield movie. This is a surprise movie. And the commercial went on to explain that it's available right now. They released it on Sunday during the Super Bowl on Netflix. It's called Cloverfield Paradox.
Now, the deal with Cloverfield is it's a world, mm-hmm. and there's a lot of things going on in this mm-hmm. world. And so what they're doing is they're telling a bunch of stories.
From so many different perspectives. This one is from a very different perspective because it's from a space station out in space where there's an energy crisis. The world is running out of energy. Petroleum is gone, and they need to find some other way to supply the world with energy. So they make this device that they can only safely use up in space and then beam the energy down from this device. It takes them 2 years in space to try to make this happen. They have a lot of failures, and then suddenly it works. The day that it works, the Earth disappears.
So there's the story.
There's your story.
Wow.
This is not terrible filmmaking. This is not great. I can see why...
You're selling this, Steve.
I can see why I didn't go to the movie theater to watch this. I can see why this is a really good pickup for Netflix. The studio had pretty much abandoned it, and Netflix swooped in, gave them a bunch of money, and said, we'll take it.
But the first two Cloverfields were pretty good.
The second one especially.
Sure.
10 Cloverfield Lane is a really good movie.
It starred that guy from Roseanne.
Yeah. Before he lost all the weight, so he was still big John Goodman.
Oh!
Yeah, now he is a much skinnier human being. This is a really good movie. There's a lot of comic elements to this. Mm-hmm. Chris O'Dowd is one of my favorite actors right now, and he adds a really good comic touch to it. There's a lot of suspense. There's a lot of questionable science going on in the sci-fi picture.
That's how they work.
That's how it works, and it is a fun ride. I do suggest that you go to your Netflix and watch Cloverfield Paradox.
And we both, I think we catch a little bit of the Olympics going on right now. It's on. I found, I should just mention, I found watching through the app much better than trying to find it through NBC at night and dealing with NBCSN and USA at times.
Yeah.
The app is just a lot easier to get to something you want to see.
It's well organized.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We've been watching it just on the straight NBC feed, and it's been a little bit frustrating wading through the commercials and seeing footage from 12 hours before. That's the one thing about the Olympics is you're watching these things from the past, and the app might be the answer to that. Opening this week, the big movie of this week, maybe the big movie of the spring, is Black Panther.
It stars that guy from 42, right? Robinson?
Oh, yeah. He's No, it's not Robinson.
No. James Brown. It stars James Brown.
I love how you don't know the names of any actors, but you can remember where they came from other movies. That's great.
It stars Thurgood Marshall, Steve. Chadwick Boseman.
Chadwick Boseman is one of the really great actors working right now, and I really look forward to this Black Panther. Critics have been raving about this. Expectations are very high for this movie.
Well, Marvel, everything Marvel touches turns to gold. I mean, my goodness, they took D-level Guardians of the Galaxy, and we're all going, yeah, Chris Pratt and Groot, and we're going to watch it all. Look at that rocket, that little raccoon.
Make another one.
Exactly. So, of course, we're going to watch Black Panther. This looks a lot of fun.
Yeah.
This is going to be the big film. All your kids are going to want to go see it.
Several times, probably.
Except for my daughters, who will not go see anything with me. But other than that...
Everybody else will go to the movies with you, Chip. You'll just make friends like you usually do.
That's right. A big group hug.
Can you explain this movie to us, Chip? Yes. Sit down and I will explain the entire film.
It's from Africa. Wakanda.
This has an all-star cast. This is quite possibly the best Marvel movie ever.
Well, they certainly did put a lot of effort into casting this, but then again, everybody wanted to be in it.
Right. Because Marvel is Marvel at this point, as opposed to, say, 10 years ago when maybe you didn't want to be a part of the Marvel movie.
Speaking of which, did you see the big picture they took for the 10th anniversary of starting the Marvel movies, where all the actors came back?
Oh, wow.
And Robert Downey Jr. sitting at the bottom of it, just with his hands spread out. A lot of fun. This will be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I look forward to that one. There is another movie called Samson. This is another superhero movie.
Which reminds me, we probably should get a haircut maybe before seeing this.
Shave and a haircut. Two bits. Samson is the story of
it's a love story, Steve.
Oh, yeah, it's a love story. This is, you know, the superhero of the Bible, the guy who has super strength and then gets a haircut and gets a real job.
Don't give away the spoilers, Steve.
It's an old story. I think people have seen it or read it.
It's the kryptonite, baby.
Yeah, haircuts are kryptonite. That's what my teenager tells me. That he has to have to grow his hair out.
All right, so if you didn't see those two movies, there's a great children's movie. It looks like a lot of fun.
Oh, don't say children's movie. This is a family film. This is Early Man. This is the next movie from Nick Park and Aardman Animation.
So Shaun the Sheep, Chicken Run.
Wallace and Gromit. Thank you very much.
These are always wonderful.
I love
wonderful.
These guys. They have such interesting ideas. These characters literally come to life through this claymation, and it's so much fun to watch.
And the guy says, I'm just a caveman.
Of course he does. Really click on this trailer. I really look forward to that one. I will see that one after I see Black Panther. Okay, then there's other movies. This one is very weird.
There's a whole bunch of other films that come out every week. These are a couple of the smaller releases.
Yeah, the first one stars Nicolas Cage.
Nick Cage, baby.
Which you would think would be a huge blockbuster action hit.
There's no Las Vegas in this, is there?
No, I don't think so. I don't know how much Elvis he still has in him, but this movie is so weird. It's called Looking Glass. It's about a guy who buys a hotel, more of a motel, I think, and finds that there are secret passages to which he can look through the mirrors into the rooms.
Well, there you go.
And then there's a murder that happens, and the police investigating the murder say, hey, did you know that there were these mirrors? And he goes, yeah. He goes, did you kill this girl? He goes, no. This is not a Nick Cage action movie. This is so weird.
According to you, it isn't.
As is.
Anyway, this will be a much more of an interesting feel. There's another one coming out this week.
Yeah, The Boy Downstairs. This is your standard romantic comedy. This is a young lady in the city, gets a new apartment, and finds out that she's living upstairs from her ex-boyfriend.
Yeah, that works real well.
And hilarity ensues. Come and knock on my door.
Exactly.
It looks fine. It looks like a fun little romantic comedy. Good luck finding that one. The Boy Downstairs.
Book it.
Brings us to our book of the week. And, you know, I read a lot of books, and a lot of them are science fiction based. I read a lot of interesting things, and I watch a lot of Mystery Science Theater 3000 and Riff Tracks.
I know. You have a love for the medium, Steve.
I do. I love bad movies, and I love good books.
You love bad movies with good comedy over the bad movies.
Yes. So here's what I propose. I think that we should talk about a new book that just came out this Wednesday. It's called The Pole Vault Championship of the Entire Universe.
Excellent.
Connor Listoka is here. He's the author, and he is going to tell us all about it. Good morning, Connor.
Good morning, guys. How are you doing?
Oh, this is great. This is a great day in America. I'll tell you that much.
I'm excited to be here. I hope that for the book it segment, my personal pan pizza is going to be delivered to me any minute now.
Excellent.
That's good timing. Timing is everything for Pan Pizza. You are the senior writer and producer at Riff Trax. You are the voice of Disembodio on Riff Trax. Those of you who are Riff Trax fans, you've heard Connor's voice, sort of.
And sort of, yeah. You have shifted and some effect applied to it.
A little bit. You have a podcast called 372 Pages We'll Never Get Back. You host that with Michael J. Nelson. And you've written lots of novels. This is your latest novel. What is the story of the pole vault championship of the entire universe?
Well, I'm glad you asked, guys. So the pole vault championship of the entire universe. It sounds weird to hear other people say that title out loud, because I've been saying it out loud to myself, you know, for the past couple years. But it's fun to hear other people say it. So the book is about a 15-year-old girl named Kara Everglades. She just finished her freshman year of high school, and she's sort of down in the dumps because she's never really had an adventure. And then who should show up at her door but her grandfather, Cornelius, who she has long presumed to be dead because her parents told her that. But he's not dead. He has actually sort of been spent the past 30 years founding his own tiny little micronation. And he has tricked the governing body of the Olympics into holding the Olympics there. And he needs Kara's help to pull off the event so that his nation can be fully recognized by the rest of the world, so he can pursue his goals of having his own country.
The timing of the release of this seems mysterious.
Is it something to do with the Olympics, Connor?
It does. It does. It was my grandmaster plan to release the book to coincide with the Olympics that does not feature pole vaulting, because that seemed like the best synergy you could do. It worked out okay in terms of timing, but you know, I had the book. I typed the end probably 2 years ago, and then spent some time, you know, editing it and revising it and all that stuff. So it took a little while to actually get it to this point. So it's pretty coincidental, but
coincidences are wonderful. It's wonderful to have a great coincidence like that.
Yeah, it's fun.
So tell us all about your protagonist. You wrote a female protagonist. Is that a challenge? How do you get into the head of your characters?
Yeah, it was sort of a choice I made in terms of, like, the last book I wrote featured a lot of characters that were probably me at some point in time in my life, college, for instance, and I wanted to try to do something different. You know, I thought it might make it a little more appealing just to have a relationship that wasn't two dudes talking to each other all the time again. So it was a interesting experience. I think there's still a lot of me in the character of Kara, but it's a different relationship, I think, between a grandfather and granddaughter, and it was sort of a fun thing to explore.
How do you go about writing a novel? What's your strategy? Where does the idea for such a thing come?
Oh, man. I wish I could remember where this one came. I mean, so I've written two novels, and one was about a college student who wakes up every other day on a 18th century whaling ship, and this one is about micronations and aliens invading to compete in the Olympics.
Wait, aliens?
Aliens?
Yeah, I forgot to mention that. Yeah, So there's an alien pole vaulting on the cover, so it does have a strong sci-fi element to it as well. They sort of show up. They show up like 70 pages into it, so it might be a surprise, but they're right there on the cover, so probably not like, really a surprise.
Like Space Jam.
Yeah, pretty much. I didn't really think about that. I've never seen Space Jam. That came out like beyond the point where I probably would have watched that, and I was still young enough where I would have watched it ironically. So
you never riffed Space Jam?
No, it's not. I don't know.
I've never seen it either, Steve, but I know Bill Murray's in it.
I saw Master Pancake down in Austin riff Space Jam, and they did a fantastic job with that.
Nice. I imagine there's things in it that are pretty hilarious 20 years later.
Yes. A lot of technology that is not valid any longer, and a lot of questionable choices with characterizations.
Oh, nice. Wow.
So how is writing a novel different than writing, say, for Riff Trax or for television?
Well, it's very different. I mean, you know, Riff Trax at this point in time is a fairly isolated experience. We do stuff on our own. We write sections of movies, and we eventually combine them and hash it out together. But it still is writing alone. And this is the same sort of thing, but you're doing a lot more heavy lifting because you have to create the entire world to sort of respond to it. You can't just have a movie there that is engaging people, and you're sort of, you know, coming in with a joke every 10 seconds. So the movie, Riff Tracks can be somewhat limiting in terms of what you're able to do, because you do have to respond to the movie. You do have to, you can't just pause it and explore a moment if you want to do that, because the movie's always moving. So having a novel is, you can do whatever you want. It's all up to you. That's also a limiting factor, because it is all up to you, so you have to do all the work yourself. So they're very different, but I enjoy both of them. I don't think I'll start a novel immediately, because it's nice to take a break between them, but someday, perhaps.
And you said you took about 2 years to edit this book from the original story you started putting together. Is that unusual? Is that how you normally do this? And are you the only editor?
Well, no. So I had an editor that I sent it to, a freelance editor, and my wife is a professional editor, and so she also lent her talents to that job, which is, she did for my last book too. So it's a very fortunate thing to have that in house. I'm really appreciative of that. But I don't know. 2 years probably seems maybe a little long, but it wasn't constant work in those 2 years. It was sort of setting it aside, coming back to it with fresh eyes, and seeing how that worked. But also, you know, I didn't do much work on it during the summer because I didn't want to sit inside editing during these precious, you know, 2 weeks of summer we have here in Vermont. So, and also I spent some time shopping it around to agents and stuff like that too, trying to see if there was a publishing house I could get to do it. So there was time to do that as well.
So did you find a publisher or did you self-publish?
No. They did not want anything to do with the book. You send off something called a query letter, which is sort of an elevator pitch for it. And the people who took the time to write me back personalized ones said that, you know, it sounds great, but we do not have any idea how we would sell this to people because it's rather outlandish. And there's like weird things I didn't know about. Like if a protagonist is a 15-year-old kid, then they immediately assume it's a young adult book, which was a surprise to me, but it was a... something that they were concerned about, and young adult books have restrictions on how many words they can be and how what the subject matter can be. So my book clearly was not a young adult book, even though it was featuring a young adult as a lead character. So it was discouraging, but it wasn't. I'm just glad we live in a time where you can write a book and put it out, even though a New York publishing house doesn't want to.
It's a special time.
Yeah, that changes your other job working with Riff Tracks too, because you live in Vermont and they're wherever they are, and you can connect through the internet, right?
Yeah, absolutely. We talk, we chat about the movies all day long, and when we're done with the script, me and Mike and Sean will go through it and, you know, test it for redundancies, make sure all the jokes make us laugh, change the ones we don't over Skype. So, we started off all being in the same office, and spent the first probably 8 years of Riff Tracks doing it that way, but it's really great to be able to do that because, Mike and Kevin and Bill live in Minneapolis. Sean's in L.A. I'm out here in Vermont. We've got people, our web guys are in Portland. It would not be possible 20 years ago.
And it's all direct. That's the other thing. It's direct to consumer, too.
Oh, yeah. And that's great because we really, you know, it's sort of 100% our thing. We don't have to be beholden to anybody who wants to tell us they don't think a joke will work or the joke is not up to their standards and practices. So that's really a unique situation, I think, and really rewarding. The times that we have had people telling us those things when we've had TV specials or, working with people who have licensed us movies is very rare, but it can also be sort of frustrating.
So tell us a little bit about your podcast. 372 Pages Will Never Get Back. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, that's been a really fun experience. It was we started it last October, I think, probably, and it was during the I think they had just released a trailer for Ready Player One, which is going to be a movie next month, directed by Steven Spielberg. And this trailer sort of provoked a lot of people to start sharing these passages from the book Ready Player One, which were just these amazingly bad passages of writing. Writing is hard to say. It was like listing stuff the author liked. And this book had sold millions of copies, though. And so I read these passages and I thought, I would love to dive into this further. And I bet that Mike Nelson would be a great person to explore it with. So we have been doing it as sort of a book club where we read about 50 pages of the book at a time and sort of talk through it. it's sort of like riff tracks for books, but we do, you know, skits and examine our favorite dumb sentence of the week. We've had a popular segment where we find fan fiction of Ready Player One or Armada, and then try to guess, make each other guess whether it's an actual passage from the book or not. So it's been, people have been pretty into it. It's been a fun thing to be able to do.
After this, you'll be all ready for 50 Shades of Grey.
Oh yeah, there's, oh, there you go. There's, yeah, we would like to suggest that to be your next book after Armada.
Oh wow. Yeah, we watched part of that movie to see if we would do it at Riff Tracks, and
Lord,
I was surprised at how dirty it, I mean, I, you know, I'm not by any means sensitive to that sort of thing, but I was like, wow, they actually showed this in a real movie theater, and you know,
people paid money to see that. Yeah.
Yeah, it would, but like, it was, didn't seem suitable, but I'd be curious to see what the actual text version of it would be like.
It's like Twilight.
Curiosity is not really the thing we want to talk about with 50 Shades of Grey. It's like Twilight, but fan fiction.
It probably doesn't have many Rush references, unlike the
exactly.
Armada and Ready Player One. That would be surprising.
So I'm going to ask, as a fan, is Mike really as jaded as he sounds in your podcast? Because he really sounds like the get-off-my-lawn old man Nelson.
Oh, wow, really? I mean, he doesn't come across that way to me. I don't think he's jaded. I think we're having a lot of fun with it. I don't think he or I would want to do it if it wasn't something that we enjoyed sort of exploring. If there was some, you know, if we were just sort of bored with it or angry, I think that it wouldn't work as well as it has.
Okay. So you don't do any weird foods on the podcast because you're in two different places, right?
Oh God! Oh man! No, that is a benefit of not working in that office. That, you know, every now and then someone isn't coming into your office being like, "I just found this in this corner of the Asian market. Like, it's a new kind of grub that, you know,
for the
durian." Like, God, it was a blast working with all those people. But sometimes it was just like, I don't need to have tried this. It's not going to make me happy to have tried this.
For our listeners who don't have any idea what I'm talking about, Mike Nelson is famous for finding weird foods and having people like Connor try them in the office.
Yeah, he's got more of a iron stomach. Yeah, and they had people who, you know, people in the office who could eat the ghost peppers and stuff like that, which is not something that I'm able to do either, so... It was sort of fun to watch people do it, but then again, it was like,
you felt left out.
Yeah,
it's all about inclusion here.
But it's bugs. I don't want to eat bugs. Sorry.
There you go. Snowpiercer. Have you watched the movie Snowpiercer?
Oh yeah, that was pretty much the experience of being in the Riff Tracks office, except that they weren't disguising the fact that they were eating the bugs.
It was a little black, out in the open. A little black Jell-O. It's good for you.
So. Where can our listeners find more of your work and all of your novels and all the things that you're doing, Connor?
Oh, man. So, yeah, I mean, Riff Tracks, first of all, is we put out stuff a couple times a month, movies and shorts. We're going to be launching our Kickstarter for our live shows in a week or two.
Wow. Is it that time of year already?
And so that'll be really exciting. We have I think people are going to be very excited that we're doing some of these movies live in movie theaters. You can search me on Amazon. That's where the books Gone Whalin' and Pole Vault Championship of the Entire Universe are. There's a couple of coffee table books I wrote with Josh Frulinger, the comics curmudgeon, about bad Wikipedia writing. Those are up there. And 372pages.com is our podcast. It's on iTunes. And I'm on Twitter at C. Listoka, which you probably won't be able to spell from hearing me say that, but it's written just like it sounds.
That's right. You can go to our show notes and see actually links to all of these so that you can...
Much better idea.
Not try to spell Listoka. Excellent. Wonderful. Thank you so much for coming in. I look forward to your next writing, and I hear your writing all the time on Riff Tracks because I am a big fan of Riff Tracks, and we look forward to the next live performance, and we'll see what special movies we have this time around.
Yeah, thanks so much, guys. It was a real pleasure to be here. I appreciate it.
Brings us to our appetite.
What? A blast from the past.
Remember when we used to do an app of the week, Chip?
Back when everyone had apps.
When apps was still an important thing. I wanted to mention, just real quick, this week there's a new version of VLC. This is the Video LAN program. project. VLC is the program that I use to watch video that I have on a hard drive. This is not for streaming, although it could be used for streaming. This is for discs.
Clear as mud, Steve.
This is the program. I don't know what program everybody uses for watching video.
It should be maybe on your computer.
Yeah.
Where you could mirror it to your television if you choose to.
That is one of the things that they added to this is your app on your phone can now use the Chromecast on your TV to cast that image from your phone to the TV. That's one of the things they added to VLC version 3 this week.
Okay. So if you have a file that is a video file and you wanted to stream it somewhere, and you didn't want to, say, upload it to YouTube or Vimeo or something, then you could play your file.
Mm-hmm. Regardless of format. That's the thing that is the key for VLC. Okay. I use this for everything. I pop a disc into my computer. I use VLC to play that disc. Regardless of format, this is the perfect power tool.
Okay, so this is not a big bloated piece of software.
Correct.
This is a very streamlined, this is like the perfect type of software. And
it's a Swiss Army knife for video and audio.
Correct.
When I opened it on my phone when this version came out, it found all of my audiobook files. And it said, hey, do you want to play any of these audiobook files? And I said, yes. Yes, I do. Because it is so perfect, so compact. Look into VLC 3.0. It's in our show notes. It's the video app that we use at school.
Okay.
So I show it to people all the time. And they
you got that for going for you.
Well.
The reason why this is important is because in the old days, we would use a bunch of programs. Give me some examples of some programs that we would not use because we now have this new piece of software.
Yeah. Every different kind of video file, every format has its player. So you might be familiar with QuickTime or Flash or Windows Media Player might be your default that you think of as the media player. This is that Swiss Army knife that can do it all in one package.
Wonderful.
That's the key to VLC.
Scroll with it.
There's some things happening in the world. Let's talk about almost none of them. Robert Thompson, the CEO of News Corp, has said that Google and Facebook have muddied the waters of journalistic writing. And he says that they are harming, specifically, responsible journalism.
Well, that makes sense. Because if you take a bunch of blog posts and you place them against legitimate news sources, then on some level you're equating them. And that's something that a lot of, when I say a lot of people, many people have a difficult time understanding that when you quote Slate, that's not the same as quoting the New York Times. Or when you're quoting John's blog and he hates whatever it is, that's not the same as the Wall Street Journal. That doesn't mean that they don't have credibility, but you need to look deeper into that credibility.
You need to verify that credibility. You don't know who the valid sources are. And that's not necessarily, it's not necessarily true that when you look at the New York Times, that is automatically a credible source.
Correct. But what we're talking about is pulling these through Google and Facebook. One, the journalistic sources don't necessarily get paid what they would normally get paid for that. So the aggregator, so we do an aggregator on our Twitter feed and our Facebook feed. Mm-hmm. You're not getting all the sources, but Facebook, Twitter, and Google are still getting ad dollars. So what it's doing is kind of stripping, undermining, one, the credibility of all these sources, but the other part, and that's because it's being lined up against a whole bunch of stuff that may not be as credible.
Mm-hmm.
In addition to that, they're not necessarily getting the money that they need to get to run an efficient organization. So this is kind of an interesting thing. This is going to play out over the next few years. This is going to be the big battle on news sources like Chicago Tribune fighting with Google over, hey, listen, if you're going to be in the feed, how are you going to compensate us?
Yeah, that we are in very interesting times with our sources of information. There's so many sources of information out there. It is more on us to figure out which ones are real and which ones are fake news.
Sure. Steve, do you have any stories of CEOs potentially wasted a bunch of their shareholders' money this year?
Yes. My favorite CEO this week is Elon Musk. He is the CEO of Tesla and SpaceX and the Boring Company. Don't forget about the Boring Company. He did something amazing this week. I sat and watched the launch of the Falcon Heavy rocket. I watched it in class with every class period this week. It was spectacular. This is the biggest, heaviest rocket the Earth has ever launched ever. And he did something fun. He put his cherry red Tesla Roadster into space. It is now orbiting the sun for a billion years.
His shareholders must be proud of that moment.
Well, I know there's a financial responsibility here, but there's also the thrill of what he's able to accomplish. He is moving us toward getting to Mars. He is going to be one of the guys.
Well, it's pretty amazing that, one, that these rockets go up, and that it's a private company that's doing them. Of mm-hmm. course, it's heavily, heavily, heavily subsidized.
Right.
But regardless, this is pretty amazing. And the deal is those rocket boosters, many of them can be reused again.
Right. Two of the rocket boosters were successfully landed. They will be reused again. The main engine, unfortunately, did not survive. It hit the drone ship in the ocean at 300 miles an hour and did not survive. I haven't heard any word about the drone ship itself, but if something gets hit by something else at 300 miles an hour, it's probably damaged a little bit.
Which brings us to our next story, Steve.
Speaking of damage, yeah, what if you could run a war remotely? What if you could create a remote-controlled tank that uses live ammunition?
That's not a dream, Steve. That's a reality.
This is happening. The United States Army has been conducting some military exercises with live ammunition on unmanned tanks.
They're building Cylons, Steve.
Yeah, basically. Well, we've had so much success with the drones flying and changing the war to a three-dimensional thing. Why not have some tanks?
Well, a lot of people know that we probably should mellow out at some point. Let's just say we were in Colorado and maybe Aspen. And what have we learned about the mellowing out of the Colorado resident?
Yeah, I don't think that they worry too much about the tanks. In Colorado, Colorado famously is one of the states that has legalized marijuana, and Aspen, Colorado has given their report for 2017, and marijuana shops in Aspen, Colorado sold more product than alcohol distributors in that same town, Aspen, Colorado, in 2017.
So they drink a little coffee, go for skiing, and then come back and maybe drink sit by the fire. And just relax, man. Watch a lava lamp. You never know what they do. But that brings us to what they're doing in California, Steve, because those same laws seem to be existing in California,
right, too. California laws are very similar to Colorado's laws, and there was a Girl Scout troop that went to a marijuana distributor in San Diego and sold 312 boxes of Girl Scout cookies outside of the shop.
Steve, is there a relationship with marijuana and the use of, say, junk food?
Now, to be honest, I don't know, but Cheech and Chong told me that sometimes you have to eat something after you go for a drive.
So, you know, maybe if they just open a Taco Bell outside one of these too, I think you could get it all done.
You know the story about Papa John's and Peyton Manning opening more Papa John's shops in Colorado in the year that the marijuana was legalized than any other year previous, right?
I didn't know that.
That's a thing.
Well, down in San Diego, the Girl Scouts are not necessarily proud of this moment, but this Girl Scout did sell 312 boxes. It seems like a ripe market.
You go where the marketing is. You go where the customers are and give the customers what they want.
So maybe the Boy Scouts will sell some popcorn outside one of these dispensers.
It'd have to be the popped popcorn, not the actual jar of corn that you then have to do something with, because those guys are probably not going home to pop popcorn.
You're competing with the brownies inside, Steve.
Right, the Girl Scouts, the brownies. Oh, the special brownies. Got it.
The Timothy Leary specials, Brownie Steve.
Oh, dear. We have gone down the tubes this week, haven't we? I think it's all of these, so many special things that are happening this week. Make sure you get your sweetie something for Valentine's Day, but ask her first if she's given up chocolate for Lent. I think we have enough information to survive another week. What do you think, Chip?
Only if we show up next week.
If you need more information, give us a call or a text. Our phone number is 805-4104-TMS. Our website is TooMuchScrolling.com. Send us an email, TooMuchScrolling@gmail.com. We're on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. We're on iTunes and Stitcher and TuneIn Radio. And every day that we can go to our questionable news source, news.TooMuchScrolling.com. Find all the information you need. I want to thank you again for listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'm Steve Fodor.
And I'm Calvin Coolidge.
In a top hat and a monocle and a thong.
This thong is cutting me in half.
We'll see you in the future. Happy birthday, Josh.